Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and it's wonderful to have an audience here with me, so fully appreciated. I want to acknowledge my team, which is an interdisciplinary cross-institutional team, and Esther Thatcher is a PhD candidate at the University of Virginia who is not in this room. She may be listening to her co-sponsor on an NRSA in the next room. Unhi Park is a PhD student, and Unhi is with me. She's at the University of Virginia. Dr. Matharos is a professor and director of a center at the at Virginia Tech. And Monica Kimrell is her graduate student PhD candidate. And Donna Bond is at Carilion Institution, the Carilion Clinics in Roanoke. So we have a large team that's worked together for several small studies and then this larger study. And I do want to acknowledge the Virginia Foundation for Healthy Youth, which has funded this work, which began in 2009 and is currently under a no-cost extension through the end of December 2012. And I have no disclosures. The objectives that I hope you are able to glean from this session deal with understanding the strengths of the CBPR approach for community intervention development and some of the effectiveness criteria that are appropriate for looking at youth substance use prevention programs. And the purpose of this presentation is actually to describe the development of a youth substance use prevention program with a community participatory research team. We refer to it as our CPRT. In a rural tobacco-producing county in the South. I think that this information is probably not new to you. Rural communities do have high rates of smoking and smokeless tobacco rates, and those rates are correlated with alcohol and other drug use. Healthy People 2020 really identifies long-term threats of youth substance use and the importance of having youth remain substance-free. Much of our earlier work, and even this work, was focused on the notion of being substance-free and what it means to be substance-free. We wanted to work with kids who were not users to understand better what it is that protects them. Many rural counties, though, have very little knowledge about effective ways, effective strategies or approaches to actually prevent substance use in their youth. So we've developed and built on a community participatory ethnographic model, which involves CBPR approaches and ethnographic approaches. So we've really tried to engage community leaders, youth, and parents in this community in the process from its early development through to the final evaluation. The ethnographic approach has been a qualitative approach that we've taken. And the work of Agar, Karam, Trotter, and others are important in some of this work. But it's about local knowledge. It's about understanding the meaning and the local knowledge that the members of the community can bring to the project. Information about their health assets and strengths, their needs, the community environment, how it relates to substance use, and the cultural factors, attitudes, beliefs, and traditions related to substance non-use as well as use in the community. This is the first phase of our study. The study was organized in a way that we've talked about phases. Our aims for the study were really associated with the phases of the study. So in phase one, we really developed our CPRT, our Community Participatory Research Team. And that team has been involved in recruiting youth and parents and community leaders to work with us, in being oriented to the project. We actually had all of the adults involved in the project go through the IRB process, which was one of the biggest hurdles early on, but to be CITI trained. And then building relationships, the members of the community helping us to reach out and build other relationships. We also developed a questionnaire that was a community assessment questionnaire based on five domains, and those domains include the community core and history, physical environment, social systems, idea systems, and behavioral patterns. it's a little more consolidated approach to community assessment than those that we know in the nursing literature, like community as partner and other community approaches, but it covers a lot of similar information and content. And then we began a community assessment. Both the researchers and the CPRT worked together to do windshield surveys, to gather data. We use nominal group process with our CPRT in order to really drill down and identify some of the important issues and questions that we wanted to use in interviews. Photo voice and community mapping, GIS mapping, were used in this project as well. In terms of creating our team, we have interdisciplinary researchers, and those researchers are from public health nursing, from human development and psychology. Our consultant, Dr. Nancy Anderson, is an anthropologist and professor emeritus out here at UCLA. And she has been with us through two prior projects and this project as well, and she's an invaluable asset and has done much community participatory research. We've had colleagues on the team who were from the School of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Virginia, very interested in the built environment and interested in architect and urban planning from a public health perspective. And that individual was a real asset to us, as well as a nurse who has just this interest in pulmonary nursing and is with us from Carilion Clinic. This is a picture of some of the youth, the three youth in the center who graduated after a year of working with us on the project, and they went off to college, and other youth took their place. But we have essentially four community leaders, people who hold formal leadership positions within the community, and then seven parents and 15 youth over the course of 3 years. Our goal was to have a CPRT, this advisory team, that would have approximately 20 members at any given time. We never achieved that goal. We had a core of about 11 to 13 individuals who stayed with us over the 3 years, but you can see, particularly in terms of youth, we have had a number of youth work on the project, and they've been with us for a year or 2 years. A few of those youth have actually moved on to a local community college, so they've been able to stay engaged with us, and it's been a true asset to have them from the beginning through to this part of the project. We held our meetings, generally monthly meetings, in this rural county, which was about 80 miles south of Charlottesville and about 150 miles, I guess, to Blacksburg and Virginia Tech. But in this local restaurant, we hope that we've helped the economy a bit over the number of months and the years that we've been there. This is the model that we've developed, and it's adopted from the work of Aronson and colleagues, and I have some citations at the end. This was actually published in the Online Journal of Issues in Nursing fairly recently in 2012. In an issue that talked about emerging roles for nurses. So this was a paper about emerging roles for public health nurses. But we highlighted this model, which addresses the community assessment piece, which is in that upper box, and then approaches to gathering data through photo voice, through team group interviews, through parent group interviews. And we also used individual interviews with community leaders. And then the ethnographically informed community assessment and mapping of data was integral to our trying to use the voice of individuals within the community to kind of to better understand the community and the directions that we wanted to take. And so it was a partnership approach. And we hope to have as a product a manual or a description of a process that could be used in a modified form from this. More succinct form than this three-year approach, but a process that could be used in other rural communities. So these are some aspects of the assessment of this rural tobacco-growing county. They actually have their own tobacco company right in this small county. It's not a product that's well-known nationally, but Bailey's is tobacco company is there. They still grow tobacco. Assets and strengths. The community has wonderful relationships and talk to us about sort of the strengths of how they do know one another. That's important. That's valuable. The school systems in this county are actually among the best in the state of Virginia. They have great computer systems, and they also have strong values and belief system, I think, that runs through the culture and the history of the county. There are limited resources, particularly in the form of activities for adolescents, and it's hard to see in this picture, but that's a True Value hardware store that's selling pecans, walnuts, and dates, and it's around the holiday season that they keep some of these products available for baking in the county. So I think there are multiple roles for the various organizations, stores, you know, agencies within the county. This is a description of our assessment process. We started with interview question development, and I mentioned nominal group process before. We really did work with our CPRT to create questions to complete that community assessment with the five core domains. The research team put out a list of potential questions that people could begin to work with, but we broke into groups and we really dissected those questions. They reworded those questions, used a language that was probably more appropriate and would be better understood within their own community. And then we went on to do individual and group interviews of community leaders, youth, and parents. The research team partnered with members of the participatory, the community members from the CPRT, to do the community leader interviews. So those were individual interviews, and so there was one researcher and one community member who worked together to do those interviews, which were audio taped. The group interviews of youth and parents, because we thought that confidentiality may be more of an issue related to discussing substance use in those forums, were done by the community researchers only. However, the transcript analysis, we're trying to use and have used as rigorous a method of transcript analysis as we can with comparative methods, identifying important factors for substance non-use and use. And then we bring that information back to our CPRT and understand from their perspective sort of the validity of that, the reliability of it, the sense that the community says, yes, that's really true about us, no, that's not an important factor. The intervention process, which is phase three of this study, in terms of the intervention, we started by identifying effectiveness criteria from the literature. We identified 10 elements of effectiveness criteria for developing substance use prevention programs that really work and have some success. We then reviewed existing programs, and we did this work with the CPRT. So we reviewed and identified existing substance use prevention programs to talk through with this advisory team whether these programs would fit or meet the needs of the community. So again, we used this nominal group process. We broke the advisory team into groups and had discussions about the elements that fit best for them, the things that would work or didn't work. We were open to the idea of developing our own intervention, but we also wanted them to know that there were programs out there that had effectiveness that we could potentially use. And we wanted to target the program to fit the community characteristics that we'd identified as we went through the community assessment process. In this process, the community members helped us in identifying partners within the community that could actually, where the interventions could be implemented, so sites within the community. And those sites became the 4-H summer programs. Their summer camp project was one of the sites. And then the summer school programs at the middle and high school level within the county were the places that the advisory members suggested would work best for us in this community. We delivered training. The program that was developed had trainers who came to the county, and so 12 members of the community were trained. Some of them were youth and some of them were adults, and this program was implemented with a youth and adult leader. So we did not deliver the intervention. The youth and adults from this community were trained and they have the skill and ability to deliver the intervention, did deliver it this summer, and then our hope is that these 12 individuals will be able to sustain this program. And we are evaluating program effectiveness. We have some data, quantitative and qualitative data, about the effectiveness of the program. And we're planning a community forum later in November to talk to the community about the whole process, but especially about the outcomes of the intervention itself. So in terms of the intervention, when I mentioned that we started with 10 effectiveness criteria, the CPRT worked through this nominal group process to identify 6 factors that they thought were most important for their community. So the effectiveness criteria had to do with psychosocial factors that were related to substance use, targeting multiple influences and different settings where substance use may occur in the community, being developmentally and culturally sensitive, expending resources to target the population. It's how much resources were needed, and it was a question of what was the cost, could the community afford this? A focus on social skills with the adolescents, and then a focus on discipline and support for the parents, parental monitoring. And along the sides, you can see that these are some of the programs that we actually reviewed with the community. At the bottom is the BOTFIN Life Skills Training Program, and we went through an intensive review of that. We went through the Too Good for Drugs program, and then the 4-H Health Rocks program. And in the end, the community identified the 4-H Health Rocks program as the program that they thought would have the best fit with their county. And I think part of that was because of the importance that 4-H has within that county. It's not solely in the agricultural perspective that 4-H brings to a community like that, but 4-H agents are in every county in the state of Virginia, and probably in your states as well. And there are extension agents who now go into the school systems to teach nutrition, to help with other kinds of education programs. And substance use prevention was one that they thought 4-H Health Rocks is a substance use prevention program, and they had not used it within this community, so they thought it would be an appropriate one to be able to use. In the end, I mentioned, if we go to the bottom, trainers, we did train 12 youth and parents who implemented the program. We had 3 sites. One was the 4-H Camp Fantastic, which was their 1-week summer camp for kids, and there were probably 56 kids or more who were in that summer camp program. Of them, youth who were eligible to participate in the program had to be 10 years of age. That's one of the criteria for the 4-H Health Rocks program, if you go through the evaluation mechanisms for the program, and if they support you with their resources and the materials for the program. So the kids had to be at least 10 years of age, but then they could be up to high school age. Our CPRT wanted to focus on middle schoolers because they thought that that was where we need to intervene about substance use prevention. And then in the end, we had a total of 36 participants. And those, there may be more who participated in the program, but there were 36 who actually participated in the program, were there for 10 sessions, and completed 10 activities, which was sort of the benchmark for the 4-H program. And then they completed the evaluation. So we have evaluation data from those 36 participants. We did collect quantitative data. We used what 4-H uses, which is a retrospective pre- and post-evaluation survey, so that the individuals answered questions about knowledge they gained, skills they might have gained, and other assets, social assets and skills. But they responded to this questionnaire with how they rated themselves after the program, and then they thought about how they rated themselves before the program. So the evaluation is all done after the program is complete. There's not a pre-survey and a post-survey, but there is post-survey attitudes, knowledge, skills, rating, and then that the youth are asked to reflect on, well, what did you know before you started the program? So they have to take some time to do that, and it's a different approach, and I've seen it more in the literature, actually, as I've begun to look look at our work and think about how we're writing this up for publication. 95% of the participants reported that they actively participated, 83% thought that it was an interesting training, and 92% said that they had learned a lot during the program. We have quantitative data and the results, and there were differences in terms of knowledge and skills. There were fairly high numbers, all in the 90s, in terms of the knowledge, skills, and abilities that they've acquired. We then took the results of the work that we'd done back to our CPRT, and we invited all the trainers to come to a CPRT meeting, and we had a formal discussion, and we'd prepared a set of questions with the CPRT about the process. We wanted to understand the perceptions of those who implemented the program, what they thought, how they thought it went. And they told us that they believed it engaged the youth, that it was an easy program to understand, it was self-explanatory. The training was important, but once they'd gotten the training, they were able to continue. It was very activity-oriented, you know, gooey molasses on paper plates, on getting at tar and nicotine and what happens to your lungs. And the kids seemed to love these interactive activities where they got to think about a concept but got to look at sort of what some of that might look like. And it was inexpensive. And 4-H, Health Rocks, the extension agents, have the availability of providing those resources, so the community doesn't have to pay for the resources if they want to implement the program in the future. And they do. They all said that they would plan to use this in the future. So the advantages of prevention using a CBPR approach, we believe that, you know, we were able to engage the community. We were able to work with the community members and hear their voice and sort of take that voice and use it to sort of frame and structure the work that we did. There's the potential for increasing sustainability because of the collaboration with all of the members in the community. Leadership was developed in the youth, clearly in the youth. They put it on their resume when they, you know, went off to college for other activities. So the youth, the parents, and the community leaders. And then we hope that this could facilitate success in other rural communities who want to think more intensely about substance non-use and use, and to prevent that use. The challenge is community participatory research, CBPR. When you're working in a rural setting, it's hard to get there. It's hard to bring people consistently to the table. Our meetings were held at a restaurant. We fed them, and we had lively meetings. And oftentimes, this process is a bit messy. It doesn't follow sort of the rigor and the steps that we'd like to kind of rein it in. But we really had to let the community members have the discussions that they wanted to have, bring up the issues that they wanted to bring up, and follow their lead as we move through the process. So we do recommend identifying effectiveness criteria that fit with a community, a community's culture. Every community is different. Emphasizing assets, strengths, and resources, and then maintaining those partnerships. And our key partner in all of this was really the extension agent. She had worked with us in two or three other projects. So any of you who are interested in working with rural communities, and even some more urban areas, will have extension agents that are there. And it's a wonderful resource, I think, to be able to reach out into your community. So I thank you. These are references, and this will be available online so that you can access some of these references. Thank you.